the sign-up book, it's up here in the front row. Please circulate it going back around and back up front. That's how it's moving, so it won't interrupt too much while things are going on here. We have a flyer for next week, but it has not been it hasn't been completed yet. I hope it'll be available at the conference next month, excuse me. Priscilla Friesen was introduced to Bowen theory in 1976 while studying for a master's in social work at the University of Kansas. While there, she met Don Schulberg, who worked in student health at that time. It was that year that he shifted his professional focus from Carl Jung to Dr. Murray Bowen, and Ms. Friesen was influenced by that new direction. After graduating from the University of Kansas, she moved to Washington in 1978 to begin her journey discovering Bowen theory. She met with Dr. Bowen, and soon thereafter, Ruth Sager recommended her to Dr. Lillian Rosenbaum, who worked with Dr. Bowen in the early years of the biofeedback program, which Dr. Rosenbaum developed. Ms. Friesen was on a track that has kept her engaged ever since. Ms. Friesen moved from biofeedback into the research technology of neurofeedback, focusing on her interest in the interplay of the brain, physiology, and relationships. Guided by the framework of Bowen theory, Ms. Friesen has interwoven self-regulation through awareness of physiology, such as muscle tension, heart rate, and hand temperature, allowing one to see the impact of thought and emotion on physiology. Her work with neurofeedback has offered real-time information about central nervous system and brain wave functioning, affecting the way the brain organizes perception, emotion, and learning into her work with individuals, couples, families, organization, and in her teaching. In 2005, Ms. Friesen left the Bowen Center to establish the Learning Space, which has grown to 6 people who do neurofeedback, coaching, training, and programs for learning opportunities. She continues on the Bowen Center faculty, and her topic for tonight is differentiation of self, past and present. Please welcome Ms. Friesen.
Welcome. Thank you. I look forward to talking tonight about what I would call a question I've had in the last 2 years in particular. And what I have, the question to me, I started with Murray Bowen in 76 and with biofeedback in 78 and have basically had access to data or technology my entire professional life. What has been curious to me is the interplay between physiology, brain function, and family. And what has been hard for me to kind of appreciate is what's been the difficulty in having the information that people experience from biofeedback and neurofeedback as they work on their own functioning and self, both at a kind of a conceptual level and at a process level. What is the connection between this, my professional life, and this concept of differentiation of self? In some ways, there seems to be some passing in the dark around this conceptually. And what I decided to do for my own kind of understanding is to go back in the history of the ideas, which is to me the way I can kind of get my grounding in kind of understanding what are the intellectual arenas that are a part of these different fields, and how does it relate to differentiation of self? So what you're going to hear today is kind of a traveling through from Dr. Bowen's initial conception of differentiation of self and variation, which of course is what this whole spring meeting is about, how to understand what the variation is in the human experience between families, within individuals, at all levels of the emotional system. And also, how does the process of differentiation of self include or not biofeedback technologies that give facts at different levels of the emotional system? So I want to go back to Dr. Bowen, early Bowen. But first, I couldn't pass this up. Never, ever think outside the box. All of us are kind of left with, how do we think outside of these intellectual templates that come from our emotional experience with ideas? Whether we read them, whether we're told who to read, whether it has to do with our relationship with Dr. Bowen and who we were related to in the whole world of the ideas. Of course, ideas operate on the emotional relationship system. It has been true through all of history. The question to me is, how to really for myself to understand what was Bowen trying to communicate with this idea? What was he dealing with in his relationship environment and intellectual environment? And what have been the threads that have been a part of that early history that live in what we see and what we don't see today? So, first of all, I'm going to be tracking kind of the conceptual framework for what differentiation of self is as an idea, and then the process of differentiation. Now, Dr. Bowen spoke often about this being an essential interplay, that the process of differentiation informs conceptualizing what differentiation of self is, and vice versa, that this is a very fluid and dynamic interplay. And this was a big part of his early research, particularly at NIMH. So the important part of this that has gotten me caught is the ways in which we get focused on words. And you know, in our humanness and our left brainness, words are very, simple. They are very superficial compared to what is the implication of an idea. So, Dr. Bowen initially described the concept of differentiation as a psychological theory that postulated the human as a biological being. It's a psychological theory that postulates the human as a biological being. Now, all of us know that Dr. Bowen talked about all levels of the emotional system, physiology, all levels of the individual organism is a part of the unit. What he described as psychological from his intellectual framework is that he addressed the psychological theory because it is the area that the human could change. One can change cognition, perception, relationship, programming, reasoning, interpreting, misinterpreting, reacting. So in some ways, I would suggest that this history of Dr. Bowen addressing the psychological theory based in biology, and this process that he engaged in, which is to communicate this with families using the area that they could affect, unique to the human. Now, this notion came out of the early first fruits of this, were all the way back at Menninger. And one of the things, I'll come back to this here, one of the things, and I have had many conversations with Catherine Racka, who I would say is the archivist of the Bowen project in those early years. So for those of you that have had a chance to go back to some of his early work, one of the articles that was published in the Family Systems Journal in 1995 is an article that came out of the archives called The Psychological Formulation of Schizophrenia. Now, I read this 24 times. So if you've read it once, go back and read it again and again. Because I think what he captures in this, read it with a different question. So what I took to this article this time was how to understand what was the intellectual context in which Dr. Bowen was using the words that he was using, particularly psychology. What did that mean to him? And how has that guided the way in which in this room today we think about differentiation of self as a concept and a process? So Catherine describes that Bowen's effort to move Freudian theory to a more scientific foundation based on the idea that the human is a biological being and part of all living things and not separate due to his psychology or due to his brain function. So think about where who his colleagues were at this time, who he was living with. I live with all of you. Dr. Bowen was living with people who were Freudian, psychoanalysis. He was living in Menninger. They did not think about man as a biological person, as a biological species. This is unique. So if you think a minute about what it takes to have an idea that is different than the group, this was the position Dr. Bowen was in as he was beginning to describe this. So interestingly, he used the word psychology, which was also a word that was used in psychoanalysis. But he was talking about a psychological theory that was aimed towards a biological species. So how did he come up with this word differentiation? The word differentiation came up very early, and it came out in how each individual transference, so he's still from a framework of coming from Freud, how each individual transference was different based upon the individual's capacity to feel and think. He inferred that the transference related to the family relationships. This was the glimmer. This was the beginning of an understanding of how people varied and differed in the way in which they related to each other. I think this is important because if you think about psychology as being, in some ways, what is the main process that is a part of Bowen theory consultation today, it's a psychological process. Okay, that's kind of the basic way in which it's considered. So what happened then is in this early article, he talked about this jump. There are like, I think there are 28 things I listed that are all have the glimmers of Bowen theory. All these, each of the phrases about another principle that guided Bowen theory, another principle that went into theory, there are 28 of them or something. So if you read them through, you can begin to see the first fruits of many of the concepts. So what he talked about is we could see patterns, even in, quote, normal families, and in the staff and in ourselves. So at some point, he was moving from seeing the what he called more an entity in schizophrenia to something that was in all of us. And then shifted away from schizophrenia to all levels of lesser problems and to people without clinical problems. Now, these are examples of some of the things that these 28 things, and you can begin to get a glimmer of what are the precursors to what does it take to be a self in a relationship. So in this project on NIMH, demands are not insatiable or unreasonable as a quality in the patient. They disappeared when the therapist was able to get his position clear. So he's looking at what the responsibility is in the relationship process of the therapist. So you're beginning to see all these first fruits of where Bowen theory has gone in the training. The major obstacle is the psychiatrist's mothering or rejecting attitude. The psychiatrist. Motivation towards maturity can be blocked by well-intentioned actions. The mother's own unsureness of self causes her to psychologically hold on to the symbiotic oneness, which retards the child's psychological development. You can read 28 of these, and in any one of these, you can begin to describe what eventually becomes theory itself. Now, this is what was really tricky to me. So I'm thinking, how does this work? I kind of went back and I realized I never had a chance to ask Dr. Mullen some very important questions about biofeedback. So this is one of the things he wrote in the schizophrenia study. And the thing that I remember talking to him about later, and I'll show you a little bit about what I didn't understand at the time what he was saying. So in this article where he talks about schizophrenia, which he later describes, he says the effort is made in the belief that schizophrenia is deeply involved in the primitive psychological processes that shade into the somatic. So, Dr. Bowen was interested initially in biofeedback, and he talked about this in video, some audio tapes that I've been kind of going back and re-listening to, in 1979. So I came in 78, 79. So this would have been right at the beginning of when I was here. Dr. Rosenbaum, who happens to be here, thank goodness, began this program in 1975-76. This is early in the biofeedback program. Dr. Bowen is doing a talk called Biofeedback as Bridge. And he talks about what that last quote was about. What he saw in the schizophrenic was that he observed that a schizophrenic could have physical symptoms and no longer was psychotic and move back and forth. And one of the reasons he was interested in biofeedback is he thought maybe biofeedback, which was just beginning back in the 60s, 50s and 60s, might be able to answer that question. What's the nature of this emotional process that would move between psychosis and emotional process? So, I did this videotape with him in 1985. Now, these dates start being real important. You know, you don't know it at the time, but I'm going into a ramble in this tape that goes on and on about the question I had. So in 85, I'd been involved with biofeedback for over 6 years, 7 years. And what I saw on the biofeedback was this variation between people in how exaggerated the physiological responses are, how much they could recover. And to begin to look at them as related to the family functioning. And one of the things I got really interested in is how do these different physiological patterns develop? How do they come to be? So I got very interested in development. How does one become a blood pressure responder, cardiovascular responder? How is one more physiologically tuned and symptomatic in a physiological way in one arena of the physiology than another? That's what I was interested in. So I'm talking to him on and on over here about how is it that the mother and the child get into this thing and how it comes out in the physiology. And I go on too long. And finally, this is what he says.
My therapist would say that all of self and what there is in one bag, see, we're able to modify just the psychological elements that we can modify. But essentially, that's where the theory is.
So he didn't have much to say about physiology. I mean, it wasn't like he wasn't interested. It just, that's not where the theory was from his perspective. In 1985. Now, at this conference, this 1979 conference, Dr. Rosenbaum spoke after Dr. Bowler. And what Dr. Rosenbaum contributed is that what she saw as Bowen saw, that this is what he thought it might contribute. What Dr. Rosenbaum brought was an understanding that the field of biofeedback was focused on this thing called self-regulation. And that, in fact, self-regulation at the physiological level is a component of increased flexibility in functioning. And she developed a very successful clinic program that included, I think, 14 interns in all, of which there are a number of us in this room, and developed a generous grouping of people who were interested in using the biofeedback as a way of two things. One, developing the facts and seeing the facts of the physiological dance that's a part of all of us, and seeing the extent to which it's related to the relationship dance that's also orchestrated, so that the physiology is another aspect of functioning. Psychology, physiology are both a part of the emotional system. And biofeedback was incorporated as a way to use psychology, I would say, in a broader way, psychology being that psychology is what it is you can be aware of with and have intention. So what biofeedback gave psychology an opportunity to see is the way in which one's physiological responsiveness was reacting, something one could not know, and develop more knowledge about it. But it was psychological. And what I mean by that is it required awareness. It included learning how to alter one's physiology through facts of how your physiology was reacting. So in a way, again back to Dr. Bowen's idea that this is a psychological theory aiming towards biology, biofeedback was an access to another level of the emotional system, but it was still psychology in the sense that it required awareness. So, I have a back audience here. So one of the ways, I think more over time, the notion, I think, of self-regulation, one of these tricky little things that's been in Bowen theory and process of Bowen theory has been, you know, this awful word that if it's a technique, it's bad. And I think a way to translate this is instead of, you know, Dr. Bowen had a lot of techniques. If you call them methods, then you might get at it a little bit differently. They're methods by which people can use their psychology to develop more capability and resilience and recovery, and all of that is a, there are a lot of methods by which one can learn about reactivity, manage reactivity, both of which are essential for differentiation of self, for the process of differentiation of self. Now, for my colleagues and I who are working in the biofeedback program, what was also happening, which I think biofeedback did contribute, not what Dr. Bowen thought it was going to, but what it did contribute, was the moment-to-moment linking of the physiological processes with the nuances of the relationships. So this is, you know, this is so complex. And colleagues such as my colleague Ms. Harrison, who has developed a way of using the physiology to observe how triangles operate, is a mature example of what was being looked at and thought about during this time period with the biofeedback. Another thing I think I've often thought about, well, maybe people that were not as interested in the biofeedback weren't the ones that were fortunate to have physical symptoms. Because I think in some ways, physical symptoms are an entree to being able to observe kind of a constant biofeedback, your own physiological symptoms. And that, in fact, this whole biofeedback effort contributed to the theory, I think, of the understanding more of the nuances of this over-under functioning, of which physical symptoms was a part. So, I think of biofeedback, again, if we're talking about the history of ideas here, I would think about biofeedback as psychological in the way Dr. Bowen described it, in that it uses intention and awareness. It's guided by intention and awareness. Physiological self-regulation, then, is a skill. It's a skill, a little bit like learning how to observe yourself in a relationship. It's a skill. It's a training. And it is a skill that can be enlisted when it's necessary, and certainly develop the capability to decrease symptoms. Now, I think just as in Bowen theory, where after you've done this a long time, things become automatic. You don't have to think about them. I think that's true also for biofeedback. People become automatic in their ability to, for their physiology to alter. So, what I'd like to get back to here then is, how do we get access? Let me say it a different way. All of these aspects are a part of the emotional system. All of these things vary based upon the relationship process. All of these things vary based on differentiation of self. They're interrelated in ways that are relationship processes. So the question to me is, conceptually, how do you get at that from a differentiation perspective? How do you get at that all of these things are a part of the concept of differentiation, and one can, it can be bigger, it can be broader than a psychological theory heading towards biology. It can be a biological theory that includes psychology. Do you get my drift here, where I'm kind of going with this? Okay. So, when I think about what Bowen developed as methodologies to developing ways in which one could interrupt and alter one's level of differentiation, one's chronic anxiety, these are a few. You could add more. Develop a research project for yourself. Relating to extended family, developing one-to-one relationships with extended family. Bridging cutoffs, detriangling. Dr. Bowen says you can only differentiate a self in a triangle. All of these are aspects of this emotional system, and there are methodologies or there are avenues into which one can address a self from a biological way that includes psychology. Okay, now I want to get to neurofeedback. So it's almost 20 years that you've heard me talk about this and complain that you can't understand me. No, I'm teasing. Neurofeedback adds another component. So neurofeedback is biofeedback that is giving information to the central nervous system. The central nervous system, in a way, is more basic than the physiology. It is this, I'm going to say it different than this. This doesn't work for me. I think about the brain and the central nervous system's job in evolution is to experience that there is something out there. However you perceive it, you take it in, make sense of it, and then you do something about it. All of those stages, from how your senses work, to what your senses do, what your brain does with what that input is, what you make of the decision to do anything, and then your action, all of those things, including an action being physiology, a physiological action, all of those things are mediated in the system. They are all in the system. Beliefs, psychology, the senses, the motoric aspects of the body. Everything develops in the relationship system, including the multi-generational relationship system and the relationship system that one is adapting in right now. The central nervous system, one of the things I think that's been so tricky to think about the neurofeedback is, this is quick. I didn't have time to do this in a much more sophisticated way. But I think about this as that if you think about this as three levels from what I'm talking about today. So we're talking about this as the psychological level, the perception, feeling, cognition, and behavior. What one can be aware of. Physiology. The electrical and chemical activity of the brain and the body is the communication system that is at the cellular level. Language is a communication system here. Nonverbal is a communication system here. At this level, it is chemistry and electrical activity. They're all a part of the same body. They're all a part of the same system. They're all a part of the same multi-generational history. All of these, psychology is affected by the multi-generational history. The electrical activity of the brain, the chemistry, is a multi-generational process. Now, these are questions that I think are just really important. People ask me these all the time. It is very difficult. I find it very difficult to translate the experience of interrupting at the electrical chemical level of the brain that has an impact up. Of course, perception, feeling, cognition has an impact down. There's no question about that. This is stronger. This is stronger in the brain. What gets generated down here is a hell of a lot stronger than what gets generated up here to affect down here. So when you think about the brain, if you have information, if you have your emotional system interacting with data about itself at this level and interrupting chronic anxiety, what is the impact on the physiology and the perception and behavior? Okay, so the question is then, what is neurofeedback measuring from a family systems perspective? How does neurofeedback relate to a psychological theory that postulates the human as a biological being? That's the questions I've been trying to answer for 20 years. To put into language...
relative differentiation of self versus fusion.
Yeah, and more and more and more. So you've got the gist. So, this is the brain superimposed upon the data from the neurofeedback. This is the left side of the brain, this is the right side of the brain. And as you can see, all these different color coordinates, they are related to different states of the brain, different aspects of the brain function. They are related to this superimposed brain. So when you think about these very low frequencies that are deep in the brain, they are associated with deeper brain processes. They are more threat-based, survival-oriented. And as you go up in the frequencies, they are in fact produced in higher, in upper, different parts of the brain. Now, that's too simple, because what really happens in the brain is, of course, it's everything's going everywhere all the time. But if you think about what chronic anxiety is in the brain, and you think about the multi-generational nature of chronic anxiety and how it is passed on generation to generation, the unresolved history, whatever you want to talk about from a psychological perspective, this portion is the platform upon which perception, thought, behavior, physiology lives. This platform, I would suggest, is this deeper part of the brain that as you think about what happens when you inter, what happens when the brain gets information about the nature of how this aspect of the brain is organized? What happens? It affects the rest of the brain. So, now I'm going to try not to get into too many words. This is really tricky. So, let me see here. Whoops, what happened to our clicker? Okay, hold on a minute. Let me go ahead and do this. So, the neurofeedback gives information to your senses, information about the electrical chemical conversation going on in the brain. That conversation is below awareness. It is below awareness. One can become aware of aspects of it, but it is fast. The electrical activity is fast, chemistry is slow, but they are linked together. This, that the speed of this activity is available through what has become more and more sophisticated technology. It didn't exist when Bowen was around. It didn't exist until 1998. The technology only began to be actively used in the 2000s, where the technology, the actual data creation, could be as complex to take on systems mathematics. So what we are experiencing today is access to information at a much deeper, more fundamental level of the organism. Now, at a conceptual level, the variation in the central nervous system is based in the responsiveness to the relationship system. It is a system. It is a deeper response to the system. The emotional architecture of the brain occurs automatically, moment to moment, in the person's physiology, psychology, and the brain. One. Now, in this process, again, it's below awareness. That doesn't mean you don't intend to sit in a chair and get the training, but it's below awareness. You don't have to organize something to make it happen. But that doesn't mean that your brain isn't involved in it, and it isn't your brain. So it's not something outside of you. It is your system interacting. It involves a person's effort to change or interrupt the deeply embedded, inflexible relationship patterns that are shaped by the multi-generational system. Woo! And that's about that. Whoa, that is deep. Sorry. I don't know what that was. Oh, wrong one. I'm not doing anything. Okay. So we're stuck. It's frozen. I'm not doing anything.
It's below awareness if you are.
Okay, so what I'm going to show you when we get to see this,
I'll have to shut it down.
Yeah, we'll start it up again. So, what I was thankfully challenged to do is to write a chapter for Peter Teitelman's book on differentiation of self. And thanks to my much more conceptually linked to their left brain colleague, Peg Donnelly, the language that begins to link these things that I know is beginning to become much more concrete. So let's go to the next slide. It's not going, huh? Not yet. Huh. You're not supposed to see the rest.
I guess so. It's not there.
Well, let me see what I'm supposed to, what I was going to say. There you go. Yeah, this is still here.
Yeah. There, so. Yeah.
Oops, it's still there. So let me just talk about a couple other things. So what? One way I've conceptualized this. So the question was, how do you conceptualize neurofeedback as related to Bowen family systems theory? And one of the ways I thought about it is that it represents a lifetime. Each moment in the neurofeedback represents a time in the lifetime responsiveness to life's accumulation of challenges and adaptations, including from former generations. So this is what one experiences on the neurofeedback are the generations, as well as what has occurred in this lifetime and the adaptation. You getting there?
Yep.
So head all the way down to, there's two slides on differentiation of self-conceptual and process after the brain head. It's right after this one, right here.
That one?
This one right here. Yep, there you go. That's it, right here.
Up.
Up one, okay. So the important thing from a conceptual perspective, that the reactivity in the brain is related to levels of differentiation. So there are different ways in which the brain reactivity is present, and it is related to levels of differentiation. So at a process level, it interrupts chronic anxiety patterns in the brain, and it changes the changes in this platform affect the perception, thinking, psychology, and behavior. So let's go to the next one. So I want to just show you. Everybody says, "So what? Oh, did it get stuck again?"
That white thing comes back.
Yeah,
it's the white thing.
The white. Let's try to avoid that white light.
So let me backtrack here and just give you a definition of chronic anxiety. I worked on this so long. I want to hear everybody's definition of chronic anxiety. So this is what I made up, having worked with neurofeedback. The sustained pattern reactivity that is reflected in less flexible recovery in the physiology and more rigid threat-based perception that leads to more inflexible behavior in the relationships. Psychology heading towards a biological. So a biology. So the sustained pattern of reactivity that is reflected in the less flexible recovery of the physiology and more rigid threat-based perceptions that lead to more inflexible behavior in relationships. This is what is at that deepest level of brain activity. Okay, now let's.
I'm going to leave it without small, because every time you go big.
Let's come back in just with the picture of the neurofeedback. And then we're almost finished.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good. That's fine. So this one right here.
See, that works.
Okay. So, you know, when you saw this, actually, why don't you go up to this brain thing here again real quick? That one. So when you look at this, this is basically the screen that you see the data of your central nervous system. Again, this is the chemical conversation, the electrical chemical conversation. As you see these different color coordinates, they relate to different states of the brain. So all of these are present, including feeling, psychology, behavior, beliefs, physiology, senses, reacting, all of this in different ways, in different orchestration of these different brainwave patterns. They're different frequencies, which mean they're different powers. So in the brain, the deepest part of the brain produces the electrical activity with the greatest power. These are in charge. You see these overriding the top. These up here are related to cognition, organizing thought, mentation, making sense of things. They are totally orchestrated all the time. When there is an integrated brain, what does that look like in the neurofeedback? An integrated brain looks like you can go wherever you want to go anytime. There's nothing that is a dominant, patterned reaction in the brain that you can't get out of. So if you have brain injury, you've got a lot of action down here in the lower frequencies part of the brain that overrides the ability to think or function. If you have too much of any of these, you have too much of this, it's usually related. This is an obsessive pattern. Mind activity that is too dominant. It's not efficient. Okay, so let me go back over to this one here. So people always ask me, so what does this look like? What do you do? Hook people up? What does this really happen? Just as a glimmer to this, and this doesn't give you any close to the idea, this is the screen that people sit next to, or in most of the people that I consult with, is going on while we're talking. So you know, the brain is pretty smart. It can do more than one thing at a time. It can conduct neuroception, as Porges talks about it. It can get a beat on what's going on in your organism, and it doesn't need to have attention. So most of my consultation includes this simultaneously. Some people, this screen is basically simply a visual screen that people can organize to, that is Windows Media Player, that reflects what's going on with the data. So let's play it one time. I'll show you what happens. So you'll hear music. There are two kinds of feedback through the two main senses that we have, vision and hearing. So what you're looking at, it should be in there.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to play.
Oh. Hmm. Oh, well. So what you would see, and you maybe can see a little bit of a glimmer right out here, what you see is this dancing of these threshold bands that are just capturing how reactive the frequencies are, how over-variable or under-variable they are. Again, these are a systems way of looking at the brain. And what you see is this dancing, where there's this every once in a while there's this just beautiful little yellow light that's a very, if you listen closely, mostly if you're the one that's hooked up, you experience a slight interruption. Now, what's interesting about that slight interruption is what it's enlisting in the brain is the orienting response. So the orienting response is, you know, when you heard that sound, you just heard that sound, and you noticed that sound, and your brain organizes to that sound. In that split second of time, you are not influenced by your great-grandmother. You are present. You're right here. And then you go back to your great-grandmother. So the trick is, it's training the brain to interrupt the inefficiency that has gone to over-responding in the adapting history. It has served people well. They are here today, and they survived it. However, it may be inefficient from a brain perspective. Now, if you think about differentiation of self, efficiency equals higher levels of differentiation. Meaning you don't waste a lot of time on all the many things you did wrong and you have to do over again, or you have to go around and you can't do it. It's not as efficient. You get there, but it's not as efficient. Again, from a brain perspective. So what this is training is your version of the inefficiencies of history that are a part of either overreacting and adapting in ways that have been required but may not be as efficient as they can be. So, let me get the very last quote. So, another talk I could do that I'm not going to do is putting together all the literature that would basically describe the way in which science sees this process by what I see in the neurofeedback, which is that this is from a very present article. It's from Sue Carter and Stephen Porges. And it's related to love. You don't need to have that word in there because the same point is there. The modern cortex struggles to interpret the primal messages and weaves a narrative around incoming visceral experience, potentially reacting to that narrative rather than reality. So what the neurofeedback is doing is it's alerting you to right now, in this very moment, and all the buttressing that includes all the sensory adapting, including cutoff that is present, you're present. So what it's training, the orienting response is a deep brainstem response. It is an alerting response that comes from the reticular activating system. That response is required to live with an energetic brain that functions in an integrated way. When you produce that particular brain capacity, that orienting response, your brain has the energy to do what's optimal, to do what it can do efficiently. Now, it sounds like, you know, I can give you a whole list of any symptom that you talk about. A major component of it includes the interrupted orienting response. All the thinking, all the worry, all the stuff that is not present, not being present. So it sounds like, it sounds simple. But from a brain perspective, if you don't have the brain energy that is the alerting response, if you don't have that chemistry and that frequency, the rest of your brain, you don't have access to the rest of your brain. So what the neurofeedback is training is that capability. So I am going to stop. I've gone on an hour. I'd like to hear your ideas and your questions.
Could you please repeat the last point?
Oh, my God. Let me orient. Okay. The point is that in the brain, if you...